Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.
Closing in on the Super Bowl, which on paper certainly looks like it's going to be a good Super Bowl. You can never swear to it. But, boy, Vegas thinks it's going to be a good Super Bowl, a close Super Bowl.
Is it still one?
It's vacillated between one and 1.5.
Okay.
It had opened even, and then people bet Kansas City up to 1.5. Now it's one. But it's a big game in so many ways. Obviously, it's the Super Bowl. Secondly, Don and Peter, it's chest to chest. Take the shirts off and go. I mean, this is big. This is huge.
Do I have to take my shirt off?
Well, after the diet.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not Pete Alonso. I'm keeping a shirt on.
At some point, though, Don, I'm willing to take the shirt off, but just not yet.
Good for you. Just don't handle me. Don't bump into me. You want to take the shirt off and flex, fine. But if you want to chest bump me, I would rather not.
Have you guys dug in on your pick?
Dug in is kind of a stretch.
Because you both shouted out different teams.
Yes.
About a week ago. Are you both on that same thought?
Well, when I shouted that out, I can't answer for Peter. It was kind of what my gut was saying.
Right.
Now I'm doing the work to see if it matches my gut. And
that's a lot
we'll
of work.
See how it goes. Well, wait a minute.
Well, I'm saying you're doing a lot of work.
That's not what you were saying at all. You're saying I've got a big gut.
No, I'm not.
How dare you?
And that picture from with Eli you did.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago.
Long time. Another life.
That was 12 years ago.
I'm as of right now, I'm still with my pick. I can't say I'm as
locked in.
As locked in as I was. And I'm probably being influenced by over a week and change. I am really among the only people I've heard who jumped right out and felt strongly about San Francisco.
No, Dave Rothenberg did as well.
That's not a good guy.
That's not a good sign.
I'm not saying it is or it isn't. I'm just saying that
he loves San Francisco.
And I think Michael, if this meant something, he would love San Francisco because he rode San Francisco to the championship.
No, I'm for Kansas City's going to win.
Really?
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You think they're going to cruise?
Oh, I think they're going to cruise.
Give me a score right now.
I don't want to be held to this. I might change. I'll give you a score on Friday, but right now I think it'll be 31-22.
31-22. Let's all remember this moment.
Yeah.
I think you're going to nail it.
Yeah. 31-22.
I don't know how you can speak with such conviction when it's basically a pick'em. Wait a minute. I mean, I think that we foolishly,
I
think a lot of people.
I won again.
Because Kansas City just looks like on paper the better team, right? Because they score so many points. And San Francisco, remember, their defense was banged up. So when you're talking about this great defense. Because Rick DiPietro was bringing up the Seattle-Denver Super Bowl. It's like, oh, remember Denver. They were lights out. They scored tons of points. They met Seattle, and guess what happened? But that Seattle defense was good all year long. San Francisco had moments because they were banged up. Remember that New Orleans game? That was like arena football. There were times this defense got shredded. However, since being healthy, I don't know if this defense is Seattle or Baltimore, but it's really good, and it's been good in the postseason. I'll tell you one thing that I can say with conviction. They spot this San Francisco team 10 points at the beginning of the game. It's not going to go the way it did in the previous two playoff games. They can't afford to get off to a slow start against the San Francisco team because that defense is not going to allow the Chiefs to get back in it the way the other two teams did.
But, no, they won't collapse that way.
You both asked me, you know, how do I say it with such certitude? This is how.
No. Here's why you shut that down.
No.
Turn the pot down. No.
There's
logic behind this. There's logic.
8-2.
Because you didn't run away as far as the standings were concerned. You were better at allocating your points.
It's all part of genius.
We have the same
really,
record,
Michael.
Though.
If it was genius, it would have been over weeks ago and you would never lose. So clearly it's not genius.
But you know
clearly
why it's
you
genius?
Allocated the points
no,
better.
No, here's why it's
you
genius.
You allocated the points better. The records have basically been
but
the same.
But would you also admit that you were up by 8 with 2 weeks left and you blew it? So
I did blow it.
I'm
a moron, Michael. I mean, nobody beating me with anything that takes brain function is not something you should dance around and do.
No,
okay?
But you beat me year after year.
Well, that's
now
what I'm saying. That's how sad that was. I'm not a smart person. person at all.
Oh, stop.
I get by guts, guile, and hard work. That's what I do. All right? And it just didn't work out for me. If you want to sit there and hang on the rim, it's about records. You allocated the points better. Peter is one of the smartest people I know. I mean this sincerely. But you were foolish with your allegation of points for much of the year.
My point allocation
otherwise, you could have been Redskins, you could have been sitting there with Michael.
But instead, I'm sitting here.
And you were smart. Your genius came from getting the help.
Help my oh,
you got help early. You got help late. And then you fooled us by saying, because I know you, I'm going to get help. Run out to the lead, felt guilty about it, said, you know what, they're on to me. I'm going to do it myself, completely collapse.
But here's
and then say, you know what, I really got to get back to help again here's because
why,
I'm going to lose this
here's
thing.
Here's why what you're saying makes no sense whatsoever. What kind of help would be out there to have me get out to an 8-1 start? Who's picking 8 out of 9
I believe,
other than me?
I
and
believe.
8 out of 10 in the playoffs other than me?
You're not guilty of anything.
I picked 8 out of 10 in the playoffs.
Yeah, but you were behind me.
I understand.
I don't think you're guilty of anything here, all right? You didn't commit a crime. Peter and I fancy ourselves as football guys. You don't consider yourself a football
guy. I'm a big football guy.
No, but you're a big football guy, but it's not your number one sport.
Baseball is your number one sport. But it's hard to be as brilliant with
football. I mean, that's a little ridiculous what you're saying here.
You don't think I'm just brilliant at baseball?
Take it back. No, but the football, it's not in the same stratosphere as your baseball. You're not a passionate fan. You cannot tell me that. You're not a passionate fan.
I am.
If given something else to do, and you were a carpenter, you might not watch the game,
That's not true.
That's an absolute fact.
I wouldn't watch the Super Bowl.
You're not a big guy. You're not a football guy.
You know what?
Guy.
If I didn't care so much about our listeners, I'd walk right out and leave the show right now.
I think you're overstating it a bit, Don. I think Michael genuinely loves
But I think that we are both passionate fans of the sport.
That you're passionate about hockey. You're not passionate about football.
We wouldn't. I will agree that football has taken a backseat to hockey as I've gotten older. But I think Peter and I both root for our teams. He's a Redskin fan. I'm a Giant fan. We both fancy ourselves as being knowledgeable to where we would feel uncomfortable getting help because we probably feel we could do it on our own.
Well, you were wrong.
You were able to swallow your pride and say, well, I'm not a big football guy. I'll get help.
The fact that you would feel comfortable devaluing me.
Why was it devaluing you? That's all you do is devalue.
But here's the deal. You're telling our listeners that you think that I can't pick my own games. And I did.
No, because there's a decade worth of information. If this was a trial, I would bring out the files of a decade of ineptitude. That all of a sudden changed?
Of course.
You're not smarter than you were
I'm much smarter 10 years
ago.
I'm smarter, and I'm better
looking.
You're
smart enough to know what you can and can't do. I'm smart enough to know I can't redo my bathroom. I call somebody to do it for
me. I'm smart enough
to know.
But
I'm dumb enough to think I could do my own football. You're smart enough to realize you can't do your own football.
Two football seasons.
You're intelligent. I'm complimenting you. And by the way, who has joined the team over the last couple of years?
Peter.
It's been R.J. Bell.
Oh, that is...
Pre-R.J. Bell, you were worthless.
That's a great drop. And also, he does make a good point. You never won pre-R.J. Bell.
I won one time. No, I won one other time.
Listen, the St. Louis Browns did go to a World Series. It happens, okay? It happens. But this change all of a sudden, there's going to be an investigation.
You know what?
I would like
Don to enlist the services, I don't know, of a Kent Starr and an Alan Dershowitz and see how many of my picks matched up with R.J. Bell's that he gave when he finished up 9-1. I won against him. When he said, I think the Cowboys are going to beat the L.A. Rams, and we all thought he was nuts. I didn't pick the Cowboys.
Well, because I
picked the Rams.
I think you're smart enough at times to not make it look too obvious.
Now, real quick.
This is so infuriating.
If you're saying he won one time pre-R.J. Bell,
yes.
How many years did you guys do this?
Well, how many years have we been doing the show?
Since 1947.
Well,
we didn't have bets a lot.
2002, right?
July of 2002.
The first bet I remember losing was eating a packet of ketchup.
So and that was back at the ESPN zone. Yeah. That's how long ago that was. It doesn't even exist anymore.
Right. So are you saying you guys head-to-head is 15-3,
Don? No, I don't know if it's that.
Yes. Well, close to it. Don?
Yes.
So this is... It's an unbelievable... So you're saying it was pre the last 2 years, it was 15-1?
Yeah.
Yeah, but what's the last 2 years?
Two big wins.
What have you done for me lately?
No, right. That's true.
Well, R.J. Bell's done a great job.
But you know what? One thing that, you know, let's say that what you're saying is true, which is so ridiculous, okay?
That you're cheating.
Well, how do you explain the fact that Don collapsed like a cheap cardboard box?
It happens.
I mean, it doesn't happen.
No, wait, no. Are the Yankees not a great organization?
Phenomenal. greatest in sports.
But also the only team ever to blow a 3-0 series lead. It happens.
Yeah, but you've done it now 2 years in a row.
No, I wouldn't say 2 years in a row.
You didn't collapse last year.
This is bad from start to finish.
Yeah.
I wasn't very good. This year, the kids have really ruined.
I don't have kids. Oh, you have help.
Well, you do. Well, you have au pairs galore.
I think Nancy helps you.
Well, I don't look at it as Nancy helping me. I think it's
taking care of her children.
I think Nancy does more heavy lifting than you.
I would agree with that.
Okay. I think this time, when you're sitting there, you know, watching the eighth run of Porky's four, you could be actually
working on football. You really think that happens now? You really think I'm up till three o'clock in the morning when the kids are sleeping? There's no Porky's three, never mind four.
Yeah, so don't even get Don's hopes up. Right. Don almost had a conniption when you said there was another Porky's he didn't know about.
All right, now we're talking about good organizations. Obviously, I do have a good organization because I put this all together and won 2 years
Brilliant.
In a row. Because these are the bright lights now. These are the bright lights. And you know what spurred me onto this? Eating the Whopper. I said, this is never going to happen again.
Can't do it.
I'm not going to do this again. I refuse to do this again.
You got to make him eat the Whopper.
And that's why I've become a football savant.
I can't believe that the thing that inspired you was being forced to eat one of the most delicious burgers of all time.
Right. So
amazing.
We were talking. I saw this article in The Athletic today, and I said, we've got to talk about this on the air, about how streamlined, smart organizations get things done. So, Gorgeous Jimmy is the quarterback of the 49ers.
Correct.
And there was always a question, well, why did the Patriots, how did this come down exactly? Remember, this was the second year of the Shanahan-Lynch coalition in San Francisco. The first year was terrible. The second year with C.J. Beathard, they were well, that was his first year, wasn't it? That was his first year. Am I right, Andrew? R.J., first year when they got Garoppolo.
The first year, yes, about halfway through.
Okay.
And then Jimmy got hurt in the second year.
So C.J. Beathard was the quarterback, and he was terrible. And right close to the trade deadline, at 5 in the morning, Bill Belichick calls up Kyle Shanahan. Now, Kyle Shanahan has a connection to Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick loves the father, is very, very fond of Mike Shanahan. And then, remember, Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator.
By the way, it's so Belichick.
Of the Atlanta Falcons. And the Falcons had a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And blew it. And the next time that Kyle saw Bill, he said, I would really like to sit down with you, and I want you to tell me how I blew it. What did I do wrong? And Bill loved that. Loved it. And Kyle Shanahan was one of the few people that did not jump him over Spygate. Mike Shanahan didn't either. They didn't say anything negative about it all. So there's a fondness there. So when Belichick decides I'm trading Garoppolo, at 5 in the morning one day, he calls up Kyle Shanahan. Both of them are in the office, by the way. It shows you the sick nature of the job that NFL coaches have. They're in the office at 5 in the morning. So he calls him up. He said, here's the deal. We're trading Garoppolo. I want a second-round pick. You're the first team I'm calling, and I want to have an answer really fast. If not, I'm moving on to the next team. Are you interested? And Kyle said, well, I got to talk to John Lynch, the GM. And he said, okay, but again, it has to be quick. Kyle Shanahan walks up the steps, and lo and behold, the GM of the 49ers is also in at 5 in the morning. Lunatics, by the way.
But by the way, I'm confused. 5 in the morning, what time?
5 in the morning, L.A.
Okay, it was 8 a.m. for Bill.
It was 8 a.m. for Bill, I guess.
Got it.
And he goes to Lynch, do you want to do this? Now, they thought that if they got back to Belichick, it was a little bit of a ruse that they'd ask for more. They couldn't believe that they could get Garoppolo for a second-round pick. And then there was another issue. And this all had to be talked out in 10 minutes. That's the time frame they had. The grand plan of the 49ers was to lose that first year, not to tank, but they just didn't have the talent to win. And then they knew that Kirk Cousins was going to be a free agent with the Redskins, and Kirk Cousins and Kyle Shanahan have the same agent. So that was always the grand plan. Kyle Shanahan loves Kirk Cousins.
Coach him in Washington.
Right. So at the end of the day, they said at the end of the season, we're going to get Kirk Cousins. We know he wants to come play for us. So now do we give up a second round? You can say, well, a second round pick's not a big deal. But in draft collateral, it's a big deal. A second round pick is a big deal. And they decide, let's roll the dice. Let's do it. They call back Belichick. Let's do it. And it gets done. Just like that. Just like that.
Change of plans.
Right.
Move with it.
Right.
It's a good opportunity.
And that's what a smart organization does. And they said, let's not play him right away. Let's let him get used to the terminology, the offense. And then when they finally do play him, he goes 5-0. Now, the another part of the aspect they had to consider, all right, that doesn't mean that they're going to have Cousins. And it also means that Garoppolo's contract's up at the end of that year. They're going to have to give him a contract. So he goes 5-0. They like what they see. They give him that big money contract. And then because luck also plays a role in a team being great, he injures his knee, and they're terrible last year. Terrible. And you say, well, how does that work out for them? They get Bosa in the draft. They wouldn't have gotten him if he was if he wasn't hurt. Then he comes back this year. He does what he does. Great turnaround, and here they are in the Super Bowl, all because of the streamlined nature of the organization. And we were all talking about this before the show. You have to wonder, would the New York teams, the New York football teams, be able to act that quickly and that decisively with the layers of bureaucracy that they have to deal with? I'm not sure that they can make that decision in 10 minutes.
Because they seem to have this collaborative effort with multiple people. And when you have multiple people having to make a decision, that's a lot of people to get into the same room, get in touch with. I think the Jets are more capable of doing it than the Giants. Because if Belichick reached out to the Jets, just hypothetically because of this situation, right now, or any general manager reached out, it would be to Douglas or Gase. Those guys are pretty much attached at the hip. And I think if you present your idea to Chris Johnson, he's not going to veto it. I don't think Chris Johnson is making football decisions. He's going to want to know. But
do you think that here's another thing? Do you think Chris Johnson's in his office at 5 a.m? I don't think so.
Well,
then you got to track down Chris Johnson.
Right, you got to track down Chris Johnson. But I think Gase and Douglas would be on the same page because I think they think alike. That's why Gase wanted Douglas to be his general manager.
That is true.
So if the call goes to Gase or to Douglas, it's not going to take a lot of convincing. They're probably on the same page. They present their proposal to Chris Johnson. He says yay or nay. Very quick. The Giants, and we were told this by Gettleman, it's Gettleman, it's Abrams, it's Mara, it's Tisch. Okay? I don't know if Gettleman and Abrams are completely on the same page. I really don't know much about Abrams from that standpoint.
And we don't know where
standpoint.
Judge
all right? I don't know if Judge would be involved.
Yeah, not at this
okay?
point.
Okay? I don't think at this point in his career he'd be involved. John Mara's a football guy. So he might not agree with what Abrams and Gettleman present to him. And now you got Steve Tisch, who wants to be more involved. They got to call him. Steve Tisch isn't in his office. Steve Tisch is in Iraq. He's filming Lawrence of Arabia 2, and he's unavailable. And now
I don't see them doing a sequel.
You don't think so?
You never know. Hollywood has clearly run out of ideas, Peter.
Right.
So now they're remaking everything. Now the general manager gave you a 10-minute window that now has passed. He's now on to the next team.
Yeah.
Because all four of those guys are going to want to have a say. I don't think Chris Johnson wants to have a say. I think Chris Johnson just wants to know. And because Douglas and Gase are attached at the hip, I don't think they got to convince one another. I don't know if Gettleman and Abrams think the same way. I have no idea if Mara, Gettleman, and Abrams think the same way. And I don't know what Steve Tisch is thinking. But Steve Tisch is going to want to know. He made that clear. So now, yeah, that might all take a half hour, 45 minutes.
And then you're done.
But that's 30 minutes right. You didn't have.
Right. And in the story that I read about how this went down for the 49ers, at no point does Lynch or Shanahan have to call Jed York. Not one. They didn't even consult the owner because the owner said, here, you're running this team. I'm giving you six-year contracts. I don't have to be involved. Because he doesn't know football like they know football.
And if you go back to the conversation you had last week that we had with Ernie Accorsi, when they made that deal with San Diego for Eli, Michael, when he was telling us, you kind of assumed this was over a large period of time, and you actually said, well, how did you sleep? And he's like, I didn't have time to sleep. This all happened in 15 minutes. But back then, it's Ernie Accorsi. John Mara is not going to veto Ernie Accorsi. Ernie Accorsi is somebody that he was running the organization.
But Ernie did run it past Wellington Mara. Because they were working on a deal. They didn't know whether San Diego was going to say yes or no.
And that's why there was some convincing, because Wellington wanted to hold on to Kerry. But I think that they looked at Ernie Accorsi as the central football guy. So when he comes to you, you're going to say, all right, I trust you, Ernie. Does John Mara trust Gettleman to that point? And does Tisch trust John, who then trusts Gettleman?
Do you see the layers that have to be to go through? And it's so funny, right, Michael? In baseball, oh, we were working on this deal for 3 weeks. It took a long time to get this deal done. The Gretzky deal to L.A. Oh, it took a long time to get that. Football, they seem to happen like, here's the phone call, make a decision, you're done.
And we, you know, we celebrate the streamlined aspect of both organizations that made this deal, but it does make you wonder, you know, it's a little cloudy whether or not Brady told Kraft, I want Garoppolo out of here, and then Kraft told Belichick to get him out. Don't you think that if he had called every single team that he probably would have gotten more than a second-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo? But he, it's all about favors and who you know. We talk about, well, why doesn't, you know, why don't more minority candidates get jobs? Because it's all a friendship league. So Belichick has an affinity for Shanahan and calls up. He doesn't even call up other teams that might need Jimmy Garoppolo. And there's another aspect. He didn't want to face him in the AFC. He didn't want to trade him to an AFC team.
But you see that. Remember when Parcells, whatever team he'd go to, it was almost like it would be Giants wherever.
Right.
You know, he'd take all of his guys with him. Yeah, it's a very tight-knit group. And if you're in that group, then you can get a lot of things done. If you're outside, it's very difficult. But these things happen in a snap of a finger. And first it was the Jets, but now it sounds like the Giants. These organizations are doing things collaboratively. You got to go through a ladder of running things past people. When decisions are made, like Eli Manning trade or the trade for Garoppolo, who's going to play in a Super Bowl in a few days, you don't get a lot of time, man. You got to make these decisions in a second.
And the more I think about it, I understand what Bill Parcells said. I think teams are better if the coach has a real say in what the team's going to look like. And obviously, Shanahan does. Shanahan and Lynch are in lockstep, and Bill pretty much runs the whole deal in New England. You got to look at the great teams, and I think Andy Reid has a lot of sway in Kansas City, and he made the decision, let's move up, let's get Mahomes, and they never had any intention of playing Mahomes that first year. They played him behind Alex Smith, and the reason they did that, again, smart organizations, he played in a system that rewards quarterbacks in college, but probably doesn't translate well to the NFL. He had Cliff Kingsbury as his coach at Texas A&M. Texas Tech. And so they took a chance. They liked what they saw, but they didn't know if he'd have the, you know, the mental acuity to turn that kind of fast-paced offense into an NFL. And they had him play behind Alex Smith, who had a really, really good year. And then the next year they gave him the job. Smart organizations get to the Super Bowl. It's not an accident is what I'm saying.
I think you have to have information gatherers, but there has to be one central say that ultimately makes the decision, not we're going to go over it with four other people and everybody's got an equal say. It just doesn't work that way.
The hope would be, though, let's be clear. Belichick probably didn't have that autonomy. Well, he probably did given his circumstance. But normally, that autonomy doesn't come from nowhere. I believe there's a chance that if things go the right way, you have a relationship between Gase and Douglas in which you really could get a really solid, streamlined decision-making process with the Jets. They have guys in play. Joe Douglas is awesome. We don't know yet from a resume standpoint if he'll turn out to be the star he could be. But Gase wanted him for a reason. He's highly respected in football circles. And they trust each other. If they do well next year and make the right moves, maybe Gase and Douglas do become that. Where there is no call upstairs anymore.
Honestly, to be completely honest, as much as we've like kind of poked fun at the Jets all these years for how they've been structured, and I didn't like the way it went down with Gase kind of taking over the way that he did, and I thought there was a heavy-handedness to it, it puts them in a better position because I think Gase is the central guy, and he picked the general manager that thinks like he does. There's not a lot of convincing and arguing. That's why McCagnan had to go, because Gase probably figured, I don't get along with this guy. How are we going to get anything done if we don't think the same way?
And personality-wise, you can totally see how Douglas would work with Gase being the boss. Douglas is cool. He's cool. He's smart. He knows football, but he's not an ego guy. You can tell that just from us talking to him.
I will tell you this, though, Peter. He would win a battle with Gase.
Well, I think that...
because he's got such respect around the league. I'm not sure that Gase does.
No, I think... Well, not only that. I think Gase would probably defer to him. If Douglas felt incredibly strongly about something, I think Gase would probably defer to him.
I could also see Douglas, if the Jets go 2-14 this year, he fires him and then brings his own coach in. I mean, they might be
they could switch roles.
Their friendship was bonded in a year. So, I mean, who knows how close they really are?
Well, and also, I mean, listen, it's all about keeping a job, right? If things switch, it's Douglas' job. But I'll say this, though. The biggest difference you have, Gettleman is never going to have a coach where they have that kind of relationship.
Right.
Gettleman's ego is not that. And that's where our individual assessments of Gettleman and Douglas becomes relevant. Like the fact that we can talk to Gettleman and he'll tolerate us or whatever, he's okay. And then you talk to Douglas and you go, this is a likable guy. Gettleman's not the kind of guy who's going to have a coach who has really strong assertions about roster. I don't think he would.
And also there was a story, I think Brian Costello wrote it when they were at the Senior Bowl, that people around the NFL absolutely adore Douglas. And they said that although it looked terrible and it was terrible that they fired McCagnan when they did, the fact that they brought in Douglas when they did, he was able to get everything set up, all his ducks in a row, rather than bringing him in at the end of the season. And he's working with scouts. All the scouts knew it early on. This is the way he wants it done. These are the type of players I'm going to scout. And that's going to work to the Jets' advantage. Although they bungled it and they handled it wrong, they could be lucky and it could turn out the right way.
Especially because, again, I think Douglas has a lot of potential.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
The Knicks are dreadful. I mean, the changing coach didn't do anything. This makes David Fizdale look better. Yeah, there was that momentary jolt when Miller got the job, but they're just terrible. That's not a great team that they lost to yesterday.
Well, it was a team that had lost 8 straight games.
Oh, my goodness. They're so bad.
I don't know what you do either. I mean, who do you blame at this point?
And I think, Don, that it's a situation where they're in a state of paralysis. The GM and the president have not even had a press conference regarding the firing of Fizdale, who they brought in.
I know that bothers but that doesn't mean that they're losing. That's not why.
But it's endemic to what's going on.
Okay.
Their jobs are hanging in the balance. They're not going to come back. This team needs decisiveness right now at the trade deadline. Why are you holding on to Marcus Morris? Why? For what reason? He's 30 years old. Why would you keep him? He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Trade him for a second-round pick, whatever you could get. And you can see that Mike Miller's hands are tied. Kevin Knox can't play, so they don't play him, although you should run him out there. Frank Ntilikina hardly plays. Yesterday they put Dennis Smith Jr., who hasn't played at all in about 2 months, in there for a lot of minutes. You know why they did it? Because they want somebody to bite. And then once they trade Dennis Smith Jr., then how bad does the Porzingis deal look again? Those two guys that are in charge, the guys that will actually make these trades, that aren't even allowed to comment on why the coach was fired, they're going to have to make the decision whether or not to trade these people. To me, that's dysfunctional, because what you're doing, two guys that probably will not be here are going to shape the franchise moving forward. This trade deadline's important. There doesn't seem to be any urgency. I mean, what is he waiting for? Masai Ujiri to leave Toronto? There's got to be somebody out there that could run your program. Or if these guys are running the program, let them go front and center and say exactly what's going on.
Well, that didn't happen, and you're not going to have it happen now. But is that going to change anything as far as the fans are concerned? I agree with you that's a bad optic, and it makes you kind of wonder what's going on. But that doesn't mean that necessarily that a trade's going to be a bad one. They just their communication skills just aren't great. But is that connected to them being just a bad team? And who is going to be in charge?
I don't know. But it does tell you everybody they brought in. Their first two draft picks, Kevin Knox was like, it's not happening right now. Now, Frank Ntilikina was not their draft pick, although Steve Mills was involved. He was quote-unquote the GM then. So Perry, his first draft pick is Knox. Doesn't seem like he could play right now. I'm not saying that he's a bust, but right now he's not good. And then R.J. Barrett's incomplete because he's been hurt.
But if you're not sure about your management team, don't you have to pull the trigger before the deadline?
I would think so. But remember, this is an owner that pulled the trigger after they let the guy draft Frank Ntilikina. So none of it makes sense.
Unless they just felt that Phil was disconnected anyway. Like, the draft is usually run by your scouts, right? We always felt that Phil didn't really do the work as far as scouting and checking out talent. So was that just the case that we're firing Phil, but it's not really going to change who we're going to pick because everybody else was doing the work anyway?
Yeah, but he's the one who wanted – no. That was a Phil Jackson pick because they thought he fit the triangle.
The triangle.
I mean, so what important. A mess. I do you see them competing in the NBA Finals in the next 10 years?
The only way – that can happen is if there are players either that they acquire or that they have right now on their roster just blow up and exceed expectations, like with Curry, where, Curry was drafted, seventh overall, and then he became one of the best players in the league. Like, is it possible that R.J. Barrett can then become the next great player in this league? That's what they need. They just haven't had that player. They've had some players that were kind of close to that, but they've never had the player. So either they're going to have to acquire that player or they're going to have a player that nobody expects to be that become that. Otherwise, Michael, it's been a long time. They made their last run because it's not a run going to the second round like they did, what was that, 2013 when they won the 57 games?
54 games.
54 games. They beat Boston. They lost to Indiana. They were in a conference final last time, 2000. I mean, 20 years. 20 years the last time they've been out of the second round, right? Am I got that right? When they lost to Indiana in 2000 in the conference final.
Yeah.
That's the last time.
In 99, they were in the finals.
Right. We're talking, it's 20 years ago, Michael.
No,
it's 20 years ago.
It is so, it's so depressing if you're a basketball fan of the Knicks. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets have not had a good year, but injuries have a lot to do with it. I think the trip to China also took a lot out of them. But at least there's some hope there because, you know, Kevin Durant's on the horizon.
Well, that's a big deal.
But there's no hope for the Knicks. Where's the hope? Tell me. You don't even have anybody running the franchise.
Well, they think they do.
But do they? Or are they just dead men
walking? It doesn't matter what you think. It matters what Jim thinks. And if Dolan thinks that Perry and Mills are the guys, then they're not going anywhere.
But I don't think he thinks that. Because
if he doesn't think it, then what he has to do is he got to get on the phone and you got to bring somebody in. You can't let guys you don't have confidence in make these trades at the deadline. Run your draft. You can't do that again. If you don't believe in Mills and Perry, you let them go now. You replace them with guys that you believe in. Let them run the draft. Let them run the trade deadline and get this team moving in the right direction. You can't wait till after. You can't have, as you said, a Phil part two where they do this damage and then you make the change.
I mean, just look what they did with all the cap space that they carved out. The group they brought in, it's a joke. I mean, Julius Randle's played better since Mike Miller's taken over. But really, the other guys, you know, Marcus Morris is nice. He's played very well, but he's not the long-term answer. If they don't trade that guy by the trade deadline, I've got to ask them, what are they doing? Are they going to sign him to a four-year deal? For what? They're not 4 years away from winning. Why would you have a 30-year-old sign a four-year deal?
And you would think that he could be a piece that a team that's contending could use.
Yeah, a lot of people would want him. I think the Clippers would like him. There's a lot of teams where he'd fit. That's why you need somebody savvy running things. All right, this is what we're going to get for him. We're going to play one team against the other. I mean, maybe you could even trade Julius Randle. I don't get it.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Wingle.
From Miami.
Now, Trey, I have a more important question. It's pressing.
Sopranos rewatch?
No. Although I do have a strong take about the finale, but it's okay. We'll save that for another time. I don't want Michael to get agitated.
They lived.
They lived. There was no death,
yeah,
right?
Fool.
I believe they lived.
I think we died.
It doesn't make sense, what do you think?
I believe we got whacked.
It doesn't make sense, though.
Okay.
We were never characters throughout the show. How would we die?
Because it's over for us. It goes black. That's what happens when you die.
How do you know?
I'm sorry. It's a theory, Michael. Better than complaining.
This is the Michael K. Show.
I mean, are you out all night? Do you do the bottle service?
Oh,
is that what you do?
Oh, he's at LIV.
Do you make it rain?
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so we ended the 4 o'clock hour with a nugget. And
liar!
Although I'm not the type of guy to begin the 5 o'clock hour, it was a money hour in the show.
But this is a money trivia.
Andrew's our producer and said, you know, I think people want to know. So they named the hockey team in Seattle the Seattle Kraken.
Well, it's not official yet, but it looks like it's going to happen.
My people tell me it is official. So,
do mine.
That being said, there are 10 teams in the 4 major pro sports.
Counting the Kraken
that do not have a name that ends with S. Can you make it 10?
Right. Well, you've got the four in the NBA.
All right.
That's the Magic, Heat, Jazz, and Thunder.
Correct.
That's four.
You have two in baseball, the White Sox and the Red Sox.
Okay.
All right. So
that's
that gives us six.
Uh-huh.
And then the four, counting the Kraken and the NHL, would be the Kraken, the Lightning, the Wild, and the Avalanche.
So there's no S team in the NFL.
No.
Well, let's you go back
to the Jaguar. The Jacksonville Jaguar.
Unless you want to go back to the World League of American Football, they had the Sacramento Surge.
Oh.
Now, also, because we're having some fun, you know, the last 2 days have been more somber.
That's right.
During the break, I usually go get a cup of Bigelow tea, scalding hot Bigelow tea.
Always scalding hot?
Yeah, and I just walked by Don, and he was talking to Andrew, and I said, I interrupted them because I'm rude. I said, what would you do if I just poured the scalding hot tea on top of your head?
Imagine if you poured it in the instantaneously. While he's writhing around in pain and bubbling skin.
You were engaged with something on your phone. Did you hear what he said?
Oh, yeah.
He would report me and get me fired rather than stand up and beat me up for doing
that. Sounds like there was a bit of a conversation he was having with himself about which he would do.
Now, instinct tells me that I would jump you.
Well, how could you jump me? You'd be
in pain. But what I said was the more effective thing to do, because we'd be done. Our relationship wouldn't be able to get up from that. So now I hate you. I don't have a laminated list, but you would be on it if I did. Then the best thing to do would be to go to HR. Well, first thing, find out where HR is, and then get in contact with them, and then have you fired, which you would then be fired. Now, the question is, what would Yes do? Now, they'd have footage because they're always rolling on our breaks. Do they burn the tape? Do they pretend it didn't happen? Or would they follow suit and say, we got to let this guy go? I think it's more damaging.
Why would they care if I scalded you? Why would they fire me off the Yankee?
Great point.
It's just a really bad look because it'd be all over the place.
I guarantee you that the tape would disappear.
You think so?
Yeah. My guys at Yes would protect me.
You think
they're not Don fans.
You think they go, oh, we don't have where the tape is.
We don't do tape during the commercials.
But you would lose your job at ESPN.
Why? I could say.
Do you think ESPN would back you?
I said I might have fallen. I tripped. And
well, this is the other topic of conversation. When Peter, RJ, and Andrew get called in, who do they back up?
Well, I mean, whose story do they tell? How many people in life actually kill and slay the golden goose? Not many. I don't know if these guys would.
What would you do, Peter? Would you tell the truth or would you say, Michael's more important? Sorry, Don. Well, Michael tripped.
Well, think about this, though. What if, there's one scenario in which they let go of Michael. You and I continue on with the show. I maybe even get a pay bump. This is good.
Right.
There's another world, though, in which I go to them. I go Narcomania. I tell them I saw it. Michael came in. He poured the scalding
Hot Bigelow tea
all over Don.
So hot.
And then instantaneously played Simply the Best, started dancing around Don's decaying corpse. And then they go, thank you for telling us. Unfortunately now, without Michael, we're going to go a different direction in the afternoons. We have to let you go as well.
Right.
And then I don't have a job.
That's not realistic.
He gone.
I have to explore all possibilities.
That's wrongful termination, by the way, and you're under contract, so you'd sit and make money to do nothing.
You think
it's
a gig? I'd sit at home.
The fact that you're even debating this makes me sick.
What if the boss has said, Peter, we know what you saw. We need K. Just don't say that you saw it. Would you play ball?
Would you lie? There's no oath, so I guess you'd survive it.
If you randomly poured scalding hot tea on Don Bigelow tea, and then followed it by listening to Simply the Best, I would report you. I would stay with Don. I would side with Don.
I know where, all of a sudden, what the sound would be.
Is that the ratings?
Yeah, that's plummeting.
Oh, really nice.
Do you want to know what this show is without Michael?
The show.
It's called The Show.
Oh, by the way, I'm getting him fired, but I'm also resigning. I'm not staying.
Oh, you wouldn't want to be. Yeah.
Why would you resign?
Self-respect.
Exactly.
Fear no one.
For the first time, from the ridiculous to the sublime, we have heard from the Lakers. So they actually were at Staples Center today. So Frank Vogel, the head coach of the Lakers, spoke about the unthinkable tragedy that occurred on Sunday. And He said he actually revealed about letting the team know on the plane. Remember, they played in Philly. That's where LeBron actually passed Kobe for third place all time in points. Then they stayed over that night, and they flew the next morning. That's why they were on the plane when the news hit, and Vogel talked about telling the team.
You know, for me, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew. And, you know, some of them had heard, you know, I've seen the reports. Some had not. So it was just a daunting task of just grabbing each guy one-on-one and letting them know.
I mean, you almost have to play the role there of grief counselor. Because, you know, I saw John Ireland said there was absolute silence on the plane for like the last 3 hours of the flight. Nobody could move. Vogel was asked about playing this season for Kobe.
You know, we want to represent what Kobe was about, you know, more than anything. We've always wanted to make him proud. And, you know, that's not going to be any different here.
And then he talked about what he's learned about his team this week.
It's just strengthened what we've felt all year about our current group, which is, you know, we've become a family in a very short time. And, you know, it's something that you talk about in the NBA with your teams. But this group in particular has really grown to love each other very rapidly. And, you know, we understand the importance and the opportunity we have this year. And, you know, this has just brought us closer together.
And finally, although they canceled the game yesterday between the Clippers and the Lakers, Vogel said it's going to be good to play on Friday night.
I think it's therapeutic. You know, anytime you can get out and take your mind off of something like this, there's no doubt it will be therapeutic. You know, and just help with the process of us moving forward.
Also, the Clippers spoke today, and Kawhi Leonard said that he has spoken a lot with Kobe about taking helicopters, and that he does use a helicopter, and he used the pilot that Kobe used over and over again, the same pilot, the one that perished in the crash. And he said he still has to decide whether or not he wants to continue to do that. Now, I have not spent that much time in L.A., but I guess the traffic is so suffocating that that's almost a preferred mode of transportation. You can't get around by car because you're in the car for a 15-minute ride for 2 hours. Uh-huh. It makes the New York traffic look like the Autobahn.
In my experience there, of which I have plenty of, I think it's very comparable to hear how bad the traffic is. I know it's really bad. It's sort of like, you know when you have to get to JFK during rush hour, and that's a trip that should take 40 minutes, but it takes you,
yeah,
can take you 220.
Yep.
I mean, it's like that. I mean, people will argue that it's worse. I think it's pretty bad everywhere. But listen, the bottom line is that's unfortunately why what Trey was saying is so true. It will be interesting to find out what happened because this is what he did every day, you know, and is there any reason to think that if there wasn't a dense fog, they wouldn't have been fine?
Well, he was cleared to fly in bad weather. So I would assume that had been weather he had flown in before. I would think that'd be the first question I would ask a pilot, even if I knew him. Wow, this is really thick fog. Are we cool to fly this? Oh, yeah, I've done it 100 times. And then that would probably comfort you. But that doesn't mean mistakes can't be made, right? I mean, human error happens. It's just unfortunate that these are the types of errors you can't get up from, right? They're catastrophic. So was it just that? Like, I guess he's at fault, but it's something that it's just a mistake that he made that could happen to any pilot at any time. I don't know. Helicopters are strange.
The LAPD was grounded. They did not let LAPD helicopters take off in that fog. But Kobe's helicopter was not grounded. You have the option of doing it. And I read a detailed story in the New York Times where, you know, there was a pilot that spoke and said, I don't think Kobe said, let's do it. Let's just go. He said, but when you're a pilot and you have a high-profile passenger who has to get somewhere, you're going to try. He said, nobody wants to die, but you're probably going to try. If it was just nobody back there, if it was just, you know, an average Joe, maybe you don't take off. But Kobe had to get to that spot. They had to play that game. And even though Kobe didn't have to articulate it, you want to make your high-profile client happy.
But you would think that wouldn't be able to happen. Right. I'm sorry. We have rules here. We're grounded. It doesn't matter that it's Kobe Bryant. But you do hear stories where there are teams that say, we've got to get to where we got to go. We're going. There shouldn't be a way to overrule that. There should be rules in place. Now, were the LAPD grounded with their helicopters because none of the pilots that were working that day were cleared for bad weather? It was my understanding that this pilot was cleared for this type of weather. So it's a shame to pin. I guess somebody has to be blamed, Peter, right? But it might just be a combination of events that just were unforeseen.
But very quickly, away from this story, I can't believe this, okay? So Bob Nightingale has been all over the story. We just mentioned that Dusty Baker has been hired to be the Astros manager. Well, Nightingale confirms that Baker is going to manage the American League in the 2020 All-Star Game.
Now
why?
That makes no sense.
It's at Dodger Stadium where Dusty won a World Series as an All-Star outfielder. But I'm sorry. He didn't earn that right. I'm sorry. That's not right.
Well, no, even more than Dusty not having that right, the Astros no longer have that right. The manager who won that right was suspended for illegal behavior. No?
Yeah, but for something they did in 2017, not for 2019.
But he was still now unavailable to manage. Why wouldn't it go to the next person in line?
Yeah, he was suspended. So, I mean, would it, like if you had hired one of your coaching staff, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, the team that finished second to the Astros, the New York Yankees, Aaron Boone should have been managed that team. That's ridiculous that Dusty Baker gets a job and is all of a sudden the All-Star manager.
Yeah, it's weird.
That's an awful call.
Now, what happened in the NHL, something similar happened in the NHL. The Vegas Golden Knights had the best record in the Pacific Division when the line of demarcation was for the All-Star game. So Gerard Gallant was going to be the head coach of the Pacific Division. He was fired. They didn't give it to Pete DeBoer. They went with a team that finished second in the Pacific Division and gave it to Rick Tocchet. So what they should do here is they should then give it to whoever's next in line, who they beat in the American League. It should be Aaron Boone. Absolutely. It should be Aaron Boone. Why should Dusty Baker get the benefit just because he happened to be at the right place at the right time?
And don't tell me, you know, it's storybook because, you know, he played for the Dodgers. The games at Dodger Stadium. I'm sorry.
No,
that's not good enough. This is terrible. I wonder who came up with this.
Can I play devil's advocate for just a second?
And by the way, John Heyman just says it's not a two-year deal. It's 1 year with a team option.
So that's
how
actually
badly did Dusty want this job?
And Rojas was 2 years with a team option.
Right.
So this, you know, this isn't essentially a 1 year deal.
Yeah, so maybe Hinch comes right back a year later.
You know what? Don't be surprised.
You can't rule that out because the stink may wear off by then. But let me play devil's advocate. Fundamentally, I agree with you. It should then go to Aaron Boone because they finished, you know, second in the American League. But it's no longer attached to home field advantage in the World Series. It's just an exhibition. The fact that Dusty gets to go back to Los Angeles, where he made a name for himself as a player, is it that awful for an exhibition?
Yeah, but you have to. If it's an exhibition, then you should just be choosing the most popular part. You are trying to win, and you're supposed to earn your way to the All-Star. Dusty
Baker.
I
don't know if you're trying to win anymore.
But Dusty Baker had nothing to do with the Astros going to the World Series last year.
And
I'm sorry.
I fundamentally agree with you. What I'm saying, devil's advocate-wise, now that it's no longer attached to home field advantage, it is just an exhibition again, because there's the storyline of Dusty Baker getting back into baseball, going back to his old stomping grounds in Los Angeles. Is that enough of a story to say, okay, let's just have fun with it?
No, I don't like. I mean, I know you're just giving the other side. I don't like it. I think it's awful.
Oh, that's strong.
I think it's awful.
Is it really awful?
Yeah.
It's a meaningless game. It's an exhibition. It's supposed to be for entertainment. I mean, I don't think Aaron Boone cares. He might appreciate having the time, or he might be on the staff anyway. He probably would have been on the staff.
I don't think he cares at all. I'm not speaking for Aaron Boone. I don't care if Aaron Boone managed it or not. I just think not only did you not take away their world championship, now you're rewarding them.
Well, that's an aspect that's different. I mean, I was kind of looking at it more towards Dusty. But you're right, like having Astro representation when there is such a stink to the controversy, then I kind of understand where you're coming from.
Wow. I'm not upset. I'm stunned. I just don't see how that works. It doesn't work to me.
It's yet another way to not punish the Astros.
Right.
Leave Dusty Baker aside. It would have been whoever they hired.
Right.
But
So anybody they hired would have been the manager
of
the AL.
It's funny, by the way. Because it being Dusty Baker, is at least passable because he's a beloved manager.
What
if they'd hired some 36-year-old analytics guy?
I think you're onto it. If Espada got the job, they probably would have just given it to Boone. But because it's Dusty and because the game's in Los Angeles, baseball's probably thinking, let's try to put our best foot forward. Dusty's a great guy. He's well-liked. The fans in L.A. will get a kick out of it. That's probably what their thinking was. I bet you if it was anybody else, they would have just given it to Boone.
You wonder.
It should be Boone no matter what.
What would be the logic otherwise? Like I said, in the NHL, they had no problem giving it to Rick Tocchet. Why would they give it to Pete DeBoer? He'd had nothing to do with Vegas' first half. Why would he be the coach of the Pacific Division? They did the logical thing. I think baseball would have done the logical thing. It's just that Dusty is so well-liked, Michael, and he's 70. This will probably be his last managerial job. With the game in Los Angeles where he played the majority of his career, that has to be the reason, right? It has to be.
What would the logic be?
Because you're right. Anything else comes across as, we don't want to tick off the Astros. They really earned this position.
Did they?
Well, I guess technically the baseball they did because they investigated the whole wiring system and said didn't find anything.
Yeah, I forgot they did.
So is that behind it too? Like this kind of confirms, like why should we pull it away from the Astros? They didn't do anything in 2019.
By the way, let's just remember how fugazi the whole keeping Clemens and Bonds out of the Hall of Fame thing is. It's so evident when you see this because this lack of investigation and baseball just sort of throwing their hands up. It's such a classic example of the selective outrage they choose to have. Oh, they let things go, right? The home runs are absolutely out of control. It's really great for a long time. They knew, obviously, the problem existed before that. They knew it wasn't normal to hit 70 home runs. They're cool with it. But then something will happen, and they'll have their selective outrage, and someone pays the price. But the fact that they're just letting this go, and this shows, really, this move, it's not that big a deal in theory, right? But the fact that they would still have the Astros manager manage just shows it's the same thing. They don't care.
You do realize that if the New England Patriots were a baseball team, Belichick and Brady might not get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you're right.
Football doesn't care, and they benefit from it.
And the one thing I would disagree with what Peter said, the writers are keeping those guys out of the Hall of Fame,
not baseball. I understand, but
this is baseball saying, don't worry about it. We're not going to punish the players.
So now I guess Major League Baseball no longer the ethos of Major League Baseball no longer match the baseball writers because this doesn't go together. A sport that's so serious that maybe a guy who people argue is the greatest of all time is in the conversation, and Barry Bonds, maybe one of the greatest baseball players who ever lived, is not able to get into the Hall of Fame and may never. And this, there's a scandal with so much more stink to it, and they're just kind of like, nah, I can't do anything more.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.